It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. It's National Voter Registration Day today, and we'll start this hour talking about the effort to get more people registered to vote with Eileen Newcomer, Voter Education Coordinator for the League of Women Voters in Wisconsin. Do you typically forget to register to vote before elections? What's the biggest reason? You can join our discussion at 800-642-1234. Send an email to ideas@wpr.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Eileen, good morning and welcome to the Morning Show.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start off with this. What's the purpose of National Voter Registration Day? Why are we having one?
National Voter Registration Day is a great day because it's a day all about bringing awareness to the electoral process and encouraging people to participate by taking the first step and registering to vote.
The League of Women Voters of Wisconsin is participating in National Voter Registration Day this year. Can you tell us some of the things specifically that you'll be doing?
Yeah, you know, we're a proud partner of National Voter Registration Day, and statewide we've got local leagues participating. There's over 35 events going on statewide, and they're, you know, voter education outreach events, but then also voter registration drive. So people in, we have league members out in their communities, and working with, you know, high school students, college students, and just, you know, members of the public who need assistance registering to vote. We've got events at, you know, libraries, high schools, coffee shops, in public parks, and, you know, kind of beyond that as well. And we've got, you know, technology there. So if people want to come and, you know, register to vote and they need help navigating the online process, we've got, you know, people who are well-versed in the process, and then also help people with the paper registration form as well.
So the effort to register voters, people have been not voting in pretty much record numbers. I mean, the turnout in the last presidential election was pretty low, and considering the importance of a national election like that, is this part of an effort to get more people interested in voting?
Oh, yeah, 100%. It's part of National Voter Registration Day is just to, you know, like I said, bring attention. And about 70% of people in Wisconsin who are eligible of voting age, eligible to vote, are registered. And so there's 30% of people who can't cast their ballot just because they simply haven't taken the step to get registered. And then beyond that, there are people who are registered but, you know, aren't actually thinking about elections. Like at the league, we're thinking about elections every day, but we recognize that everyone has, you know, busy lives. And so we're trying to get the message out there and let them know that the election's coming up and get them prepared so they can have their voice heard on election day.
So do people need to register before each election, or once you've registered and you don't move to a different district or something like that, you stay in the system? How does that work?
Yeah, for the most part, once you're registered, you stay registered. But like you said, if you have moved to a different place, you know, within Wisconsin, or if you've moved to Wisconsin, even if you have changed apartments in your building, you still need to re-register to vote. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't voted in a while, so within 4 years, you'll need to re-register as well. As part of they remove people who haven't voted in over 4 years as a part of the routine process of maintaining the poll list.
So what do I need to bring with me when I go register to vote?
Yeah, so you you need to have proof of residence, and that can be you know, your driver's license or state ID card, utility bill, paycheck, bank statement. There's a whole list of documents. I mean, I just named some of the most common ones. Mm-hmm.
And we can find out what these are if we go online somewhere?
Yeah, so we have resources on our website, lwvwi.org. Okay. We have a whole voter information section.
All right, great. Well, we're going to continue our discussion about National Voter Registration Day and the importance of registering with Eileen Newcomer, Voter Education Coordinator for the League of Women Voters in Wisconsin. I'm John Munson. This is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. We'll be right back. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. It's National Voter Registration Day today, and we're talking about voter registration with Eileen Newcomer, the Voter Education Coordinator for the League of Women Voters in Wisconsin. Wondering what you think. Have you registered to vote? What was the process like for you? Do you have advice for others who might be registering? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. Part of the reason National Voter Registration Day exists is to reach people who may not otherwise have registered to vote. Are there some groups who are more likely not to have registered than others, Eileen? And does the league have kind of some target demographics of who you're really looking at to get registered?
Yeah, I think, students are particularly unlikely to be registered, partially just because of their age. And so they're just starting to be part of, be eligible to vote. And then especially for college students, they move very frequently. So they often have to, re-register every year, depending on where they're living. And then, also for other populations of people who, for whatever reason, might need to move more frequently, whether they have housing insecurity or things like that. So the league is, committed to working with a diverse population of people and trying to reach people who are, like you said, less likely to already have access, to internet or, are well-versed in the process because they have somebody in their life who, took them to vote with them and showed them, how it all works.
Mm-hmm. Are there certain geographic areas of the state that you're targeting particularly hard? Any counties you are particularly focusing on at all?
Yeah, we've got events. So like I said, we've got 35 events going on, in celebration of National Voter Registration Day. We've got events going on in a number of counties, Burnett County, Dane County, Dunn County, Milwaukee County, Ozaukee County, Polk County, Rock County, St. Croix County, Walworth County, Winnebago County, and Wood County. There are quite a few events in Dane County and Milwaukee County in particular.
So it's all over the place. In Wisconsin, people can register to vote on the actual day of voting. Does that make National Voter Registration Day a little less pressing here compared to, say, Indiana, where you have to register to vote 29 days before Election Day?
Yeah, I would say a little bit less so than in other states where, like you said, they have a hard cutoff registration day. But it is really important in Wisconsin because then we're able to bring awareness to the need for people to register to vote. And we can talk about and let people know that Election Day registration exists. So if they, decide, it's November 6th and I don't know what I need to do to vote, can I just show up? It's nice to know that they can show up, bring their proof of residence, their photo ID, and make their voice heard on Election Day.
Is it harder to register the same day you vote?
No, the process is the same. Largely you can't register online because the cutoff for registering online is October 17th. It's the same. It's even people there, poll workers there to help you through the process and answer any questions that you have.
So it doesn't delay the process for everyone else trying to vote that day?
Most polling sites have two separate lines. They have one line for people who need to register to vote before checking in and getting their ballot, and then they have kind of the general voting line. Mm-hmm. So in general, it doesn't slow down voting. If you need to register to vote on Election Day, it will take you a little bit longer to get through the process.
What do you say to people who think that voter registration events are some sort of partisan activity?
The league is wholly nonpartisan, and I think that we prove that voter registration activities can be nonpartisan. We're not out there to advocate for or against any candidates or, try and, do anything else. We just want people to have their voice heard and participate in a democracy. And we think the more people who participate, the better.
Last question. What is the number one reason you think that keeps people from registering to vote?
Not understanding the process. Okay. I think the more we can demystify it, the better.
Okay, and that's what you're trying to do with National Voter Registration Day. Again, what's the website we can go to for more information about this?
You can go to the league's website, lwvwi.org.
Okay. Thank you, Eileen Newcomer, a voter education coordinator for the League of Women Voters in Wisconsin. The events going on all over the state celebrating our right to vote. And we applaud that. Voting is a good thing, right? It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson. The Supreme Court nomination of Brett Kavanaugh has slowed after accusations of past misconduct against the nominee. What are the political ramifications of seating Judge Kavanaugh on the court or of a failed nomination? How will this nomination fight affect the upcoming midterms? Has the increasingly partisan nature of the nominating process made it more difficult than ever to get someone on to the Supreme Court? We'll discuss the nominating process and how it's playing out in the U.S. Senate for the rest of this hour on The Morning Show. We want to hear from you, particularly from women. Were you supporting Brett Kavanaugh's confirmation until these allegations of misconduct came out? And do you still support him? Why or why not? Let us know. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or tweet us at WPR Mornings. My guest is Ryan Owens, professor of political science at UW-Madison. He's also the director of the Tommy Thompson Center on Public Leadership and an expert on the United States Supreme Court. Good morning, Ryan, and thanks for joining me on The Morning Show.
Yeah, you bet.
So, Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh faces sexual misconduct allegations from two different women now, the most recent of which came to light over the weekend. Analysts had previously said that barring any kind of extreme circumstances, his Senate confirmation was all but inevitable. Would these recent allegations constitute extreme circumstances?
Well, it's unclear. I mean, I think if you look at the way Republicans are treating this right now in the Senate Judiciary Committee, I think they're maybe somewhat skeptical that these are the kinds of actions that would create the kind of trouble that you mentioned. I think there's some skepticism there about whether these allegations can be corroborated. So we just have to see how this plays out. It's not entirely clear yet. It looks like they plan to move forward, and we'll have to see how, if there is a hearing in which, Dr. Ford is there and Judge Kavanaugh are there, we'll have to see how it plays out and how they look on TV, how they sound, and I think we'll have a better impression at that point.
So what kind of pressure do these accusations put on Republicans as we move closer to Thursday's hearing where one of the women plans to testify?
Well, they have to be careful. I mean, I think it's pretty clear that these are serious allegations. They needed to be, treated seriously. And I think Republicans need to be careful in how they treat this. Now, at the same time, I think they're also concerned about what kind of precedent they set here. I've talked to various Republicans in recent days, and they're very concerned about what kind of precedent this will set. If an allegation that's not necessarily corroborated is enough to sink a nominee, what does that mean for future nominees? What does that mean for presidents, for senators, and the like? So I think there's just a lot of uncertainty here as to, what actually happened, what's going to happen in the future. I think everybody's just kind of waiting to see.
Mm-hmm. It's no secret that the nominating process itself has become increasingly partisan, hyper-partisan, I guess would be one of the words. That's certainly at play here. Mm-hmm. A spokesman for Republican Senator Chuck Grassley, who chairs the Senate Judiciary Committee, pledged to evaluate the newest allegations against Judge Kavanaugh, but then accused Democrats of withholding information and dropping it at the right moment for political gain. This political back and forth, That just really makes it much more difficult to actually complete a nomination these days, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you talked about it being toxic or something earlier. You know, in a recent paper that I wrote, I think I called it uniformly rotten, more uniformly rotten than ever before, and I think that's true. Now, it's always been political. There's no question about that. I mean, we can't fool ourselves that this has always been a political thing, but I do think it's worse now than it has been in the past. In terms of the timing on this, yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of skepticism on the right about this, that Democrats had this information, they sat on it, they released it, you know, at the last minute, because I think many people have alleged that what the Democrats are trying to do is run out the clock on this and make it so that, you know, they wait till the last minute, sink this nomination, and then maybe Republicans won't have time to move forward with another one until certainly in the lame duck session, but maybe not even then. Like if they could pick off a Jeff Flake or a Susan Collins and get them to hedge on a lame duck session, then maybe they could try to get this so that, you know, the president would have to make a new nomination with a Democrat Senate.
In past nominations, it wasn't just a simple majority vote. That rule has been changed by the Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell. How did that change the landscape for nominations, and compare that to what things were when it required a two-thirds vote of the Senate to approve a nomination?
Well, I mean, just to be clear on this, it wasn't always that nominees needed a filibuster-proof majority. I mean, Clarence Thomas got through without without the 60 votes necessary. And this is a relatively new thing. So I don't think we can lose sight of that. And so, I mean, it was a natural progression in 2013 when Senate Democrats got rid of the filibuster for lower federal court nominations. Everybody knew it was just a matter of time until the Senate would then get rid of filibusters for high court nominations. You know, and I think we've seen basically the same kinds of dynamics here that we expected to see in many others as well, you know, before that filibuster became a more commonly used thing. I think most senators weren't happy with it. I think if you ask them, they'll probably tell you secretly that they were happy that that filibuster was gotten rid of.
Mm-hmm. Going back to the situation specifically with Brett Kavanaugh, there is a mindset that even if there were something to these allegations, they happened so long ago that it doesn't really matter now. Considering so few people are appointed to serve as a justice of the Supreme Court of the United States, should we hold them to a higher standard?
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's a subjective determination that, you know, each of your listeners, I think, has to make on his or her own. These are serious allegations. I think they need to be, treated as such. But, you know, if you think about the political ramifications of this, it's not altogether clear how people will react. I mean, I think there are a lot of people who are concerned about this, but I think there are also many people on the right who see this as just an out-and-out smear. And, there are many Republicans out there, I think, who are not on the Trump train, so to speak, and are not all that thrilled about voting in this midterm election. But it seems to me that, you know, this could be something that might motivate Republicans to come out and vote, especially ones that don't like Trump. So I think both sides have to be careful here. Republicans, if they treat this too cavalierly, I think they run the risk of, you know, further erosion of support among suburban Republican women. On the other hand, if Democrats push this too hard, they could energize Republican voters to come out and vote because they're really irritated and angry about this. So, I mean, there's so much uncertainty here. This is totally fresh ground for, you know, so many reasons. It needs to be treated very, very carefully.
So it's fresh ground, but there are a lot of landmines in it. And anybody, you can step on one at any time.
That's right. And I'm sure that both of these sides are preparing extensively for these hearings. And, you know, we'll see what happens.
Okay. Well, let's imagine for just a moment that the committee votes against Brett Kavanaugh. What happens then? Say it moves to the full Senate and he isn't confirmed. What would senators let that happen?
Well, I mean, all Democrats need is to pick off one or two Senate Republicans right now. Jeff Flake, Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski are the three, I think, that people see as most likely to split. Right now, we don't really see any indications that any of those three senators are likely to split based on what we've seen thus far. I think that New Yorker story that came out actually emboldened Republicans a little bit more because it was so, as many people have suggested, sort of flimsy and uncorroborated. You know, I don't know whether that's true or not, but that's what people are on the right are saying. And so I don't see them pulling off. But let's say that that it does go to the floor and maybe one or two of those do pull out. I do think at that point you will see the president nominate somebody and the Senate Republicans will move forward in a lame duck session. And I think they will say as their justification, look, Senate Democrats have been sitting on this information since June or July. They knew about this and they waited until the last minute. So I think that'll give Republicans at least an argument as to why they're going to move in the lame duck session if it gets to that. But again, I'm not sure that I see an indication that people are backing off.
Well, Democrats are saying that the Republicans also had access to this information, and their suggestion is that they wanted to rush the nomination through before anything could be said about it.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, what we do know is that Dianne Feinstein had that information. It was leaked by a staffer or somebody. But everything that I'm reading indicates that that this could have been released and investigated earlier. I mean, that's a process argument that I don't need to get into. Okay. And frankly, I don't know enough about anyway. So
got it. So say the committee votes in favor of Brett Kavanaugh and he is confirmed by the full Senate. Is that a big victory for the Republicans and does that help them in the midterms?
Oh, boy. You know, look, there's two states of the world right now. There's one state of the world in which everything Dr. Ford says is true. And boy, does that stink. Then the other state of the world is that everything she says is false. And that stinks, too. So I'm not sure that anybody wins out of this, frankly.
So there's really only a downside for both political parties in this particular piece of process, then,
well,
is what you're saying.
Yeah, in terms of good government, in terms of, you know, the legitimacy, longstanding of institutions, if all we're concerned about is raw politics and getting somebody here or keeping somebody from there, yeah, somebody's going to win in the short run. But, you know, I think I heard somebody say no matter who wins on this, they're likely to regret the tactics that they've used to get that victory.
So, well, And going forward, you know, what happens to the next, what happens to future nominees if this is the way this is going to play out?
Well, I think that's right. What we're doing here right now is setting precedent for how we move forward. You know, in the early 1800s, the Supreme Court, you know, Justice Samuel Chase was impeached by Jeffersonians. And everybody knew at that point that when it went to the Senate for a hearing, that they were setting precedent on how you were going to impeach and remove Supreme Court justices in the future. And I think we're kind of in that mode right now that, you know, we've got to pay attention, knowing that what we do right now will set precedent for what happens in the future. But again, you know, these are serious allegations. You can't dismiss those. You've got to treat this whole thing very carefully and very seriously.
Okay. Ryan Owens, thank you so much for joining me this morning. I really appreciate your time and insights.
You bet.
Ryan Owens is a professor of political science at UW-Madison. He is also the director of the Tommy Thompson Center on Public Leadership and an expert on the United States Supreme Court. This is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson.